Welcome to Gawkcast, a long-form discussion podcast about the music of English electronic duo Autechre, album by album, EP by EP. I'm Gabe.
I'm Dan.
And this episode, we're continuing our multi-part series on Autechre's mysterious side project, Gescom. We've covered all of Gescom's early EPs, and now we're going to almost wrap things up with the last of Gescom's proper releases, Minidisc from 1998, ISSSA from 2003, A1 to D1 from 2007, and Skullsnap from 2011. That'll bring us up to the present day. Yes, it's been 10 years since Gescom officially released anything, but we've skipped over two Gescom remix EPs titled This and That, which we'll talk about on next week's bonus listener email episode. There's also a few Lucy's and more obscure remixes floating around. We may or may not cover them later on. Email us and let us know if we've skipped over anything essential. Gawkcastpod@gmail.com. And again, email us about This and That, the remix EPs, as well as anything else Gescom or Autechre related that's on your mind. Next proper episode in 2 weeks. And sorry, by the way, that we were a little late again with this episode. We're doing our best to stay on track from here on out, I promise. But that episode will be all about Autechre's remix work. We're not 100% sure how we're going to handle that yet, but let us know what Autechre remixes you really love. Again, gawkcastpod@gmail.com. Okay, Dan, we went into detail on everything we know about the Gescom project on part one of this Gescom series, and listeners should go back to that episode if they need a refresher. So let's just jump right into it. What do we know about Gescom's Minidisc?
Minidisc was released by Ore Records on July 27th, 1998, only 2 weeks after Autechre's LP5. The album has the distinction of being the only full-length Gescom release and the first ever release to be exclusive to the Minidisc format, which made seamless shuffling possible back before MP3s. It's since been reissued on CD and digitally, but these new versions replace the all-white cover with a picture of Alan Phillips of Sony showing off the Minidisc at a Sony conference, just so nobody forgets what format it's really supposed to be in. As you might have guessed, the album features 45 tracks divided into 88 cue points that are meant to be played on shuffle, allowing for the random creation of new sequences each time. Lastly, this is one of the few instances where we might actually know the contributors to a Gescom release. The Touch label, which owns Ore Records and handled the digital reissue, claims it was assembled by Sean Booth, Rob Brown, and Russell Haswell, a prolific noise artist who also runs Ore Records.
And I'll just add that in terms of reception, Minidisc is more than a little divisive. Actually, it might be more fair to say that pretty much everybody hates it. It's one of the most reviewed Gescom releases on Rate Your Music, but it's currently sitting at a lowly 2.72. But I did find The Wire's original review, which is quite glowing and calls it, quote, definitely better than LP5. So
wow.
Make of that what you will. So I feel like this will be a shorter conversation despite Minidisc being such a notorious release, because I don't know how much there is to really say, but how would you describe, Dan, what Minidisc actually sounds like to somebody who's never heard it?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a noise record. There's just, little blips of sound. Sometimes it forms a quick little beat or something, but most of the time it's just literally a blast of some sort of noise, digital or made with synths or whatnot. But it's hard to basically not describe it in a way of the concept of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I was kind of surprised, and I should just sort of mention, this is like the only, prior to this whole little series, like this was the only Gescom release that I had really attempted before and, failed miserably and was like, all right, I guess Gescom's not for me. but really giving it like an honest shot this week or these past couple of weeks, I was surprised at, honestly, the diversity of sounds here, because you're right, there are a lot of like little blasts of just pure digital noise, like digital signal processing kind of sounds, not music by any stretch of the imagination. But then there are also tracks that are like kind of pure electroacoustic pieces, they sound like, very feedback heavy, but often surprisingly like in quite a dreamy kind of way. Like you kind of remember the we talked about the Japanese bonus tracks, how a couple were like kind of pure like electroacoustic drone pieces. There's quite a lot of that here as well. I heard stuff like random kind of maybe totally blown out like breakbeats and stuff in there. I heard, you know, I swear I heard like little bits of field recording and stuff. You know, it just feels like kind of a hodgepodge of all that avant-garde goodness, you know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think hodgepodge is a good descriptor for it. It really is, you know, it's not like one sort of, you know, it's not just like the same kind of noise things, or, you know, it is like these different sort of things, which is maybe the only kind of thing it's got going for it in terms of listenability.
Yeah, I mean, it is like mostly digital, I would say. Sometimes it's like just pure digital static, like actual just harsh noise. But it also kind of feels, I don't know, I don't want this to sound as much like a criticism as it's gonna, but like if you just went through a Wikipedia page of like types of avant-garde music and you just like made a track for each one, you know what I mean? It kind of like has that that overview type of feel. Now, I mean, the big question, which you sort of alluded to, is what is the experience of listening to it on shuffle like? Does it work for you at all?
Well, I think it's like the thing about this release is you sort of have to, you know, play it that way. You know, it's the most interesting thing about it. It's like in like an art kind of way, it's an interesting idea, and you know, it's a cool idea, especially, you know, it's a little hard to think of now because any album can be shuffled, but you know, but back when this was made, you could shuffle like a CD player, but like it would take like a minute to go to, you know, it would skip a track, you know, it would take a minute, you know, so I think it's a little lost if you're younger or whatever, but you know, I think that that's really the only thing this release is really kind of got going for it.
Yeah. I mean, what's weird, and one of our listeners brought this up, so I hate to kind of step on his point, but we'll return to it later. But the weird thing to me is that there is an awful lot of silence between tracks anyway.
I was trying to skirt around that too because of the email.
Yeah, I'm honestly baffled about what is even the point of the seamless shuffling of the mini disc format when, I don't know, 75% of the time there is like a full pause between the sounds. So you're listening to it on shuffle and it's just like these little bursts and then just nothing for a few seconds and then like another little burst. And the other weird thing, right, is like, I don't even know how to phrase this, because as you mentioned, it's 45 tracks, but they're divided into 88 cue points. So if you listen to any of the whole track suites, right, like they flow together kind of perfectly, right? Like, so you could pick like Le Shark or whatever. It's just like a bunch of 5 to 10 second little pieces that are just like these fluttery noises, but it's like one slightly longer sort of piece. And so listening at shuffle, you just get like one little segment of these things. Sometimes these pieces do have that kind of space in between them, but because like the sound sort of picks back up, you know, you still remember that it's like of the same palette. And it's just like, I don't know. I start thinking like, what is with the cue points then? Because basically some of these tracks themselves sound like just random little blips, but then we've split them up so that it just sounds like other like random little intermittent blips. But then if you didn't give them all those cue points, it would kind of just be like listening to an album on shuffle, you know, sort of defeat the point.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like it sort of feels like it should just be, you know, whatever, the 45 tracks. But I think you're right. Then it would just be an album on shuffle. But then those little gaps of silence and stuff like sort of ruin this idea of, you know, if everything was like seamless and, you know, kind of form this make your own adventure sort of album, which is like when you read about this, you know, I sort of imagine you would read about it before listening to to this album. Right. It's sort of like, at least to me, that's sort of what I always thought I was going to get, you know, the first time I heard about this record, and it's kind of disappointing, and it feels like the concept like doesn't 100% work because you don't get that, you know, you do kind of get these start stops, and it doesn't make, just, you know, if it just made like a new seamless hour-long piece of music every time, like that would be kind of a more interesting thing.
Yeah, and it just doesn't. And honestly, like, listening to it not shuffled is kind of like the same experience. You know, it's like a little less chaotic because you do kind of spend, instead of just 5 seconds, you spend like 30 seconds in a sound palette kind of world, but it's still just like these random bursts of sound and stuff like that. So it's almost like I was sort of tempted to say, like, you might as well just not even shuffle it. Like, you still get the idea.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, it being released on CD nowadays too. I mean, I don't know if CD players got any quicker with shuffling, but you know, it sort of defeats that. But yeah, I think you're right. You know, it's just one of those ideas that, you know, it sounds a lot better on paper. You know, the idea behind the idea is better than the execution, I think.
I know. And it just feels like a failure of execution when shuffling it doesn't really change the experience at all. Like, you like just listening to it in order is pretty much the same experience. But I also want to talk a little bit about the presentation here. You know, the original mini disc release is pretty minimal, but it feels like it's just saying, hey, this is a mini disc. You know, like, you get the mini disc logo and it's the shape of a mini disc and everything, and has a kind of novelty aspect. And the reissue kind of doubles down on that, albeit in a more jokey way. So if we think of this like nothing more than an experiment with, or maybe a conceptual art piece about the mini disc format, does it work any better for you?
Yeah, I mean, that is, I think the execution, like I said, is flawed, but you know, just the idea behind it, and you know, it being like this conceptual piece about like a piece of technology, is a cool idea and a pretty Autechre seeming idea. You know, it really something like this would be cool in, you know, a gallery. You know, you're looking at other things, but like, you know, something like this is playing, you know, constantly shuffling. Every time you were in there, you know, you'd hear something different. Like that'd be a cool idea. You know, but here, yeah. I mean, just again, the execution just sort of fails it.
Yeah, it kind of feels like an art piece in the sense, or like, you know, one of these sort of postmodern art pieces where it's like, you actually don't even need to listen to it. Like, reading about it is better.
It's better.
It's kind of like, you don't need to see like Duchamp's fountain, you know, the toilet. Like, you don't need to actually see that. Just read about it and you get kind of everything you need to know. And seeing it is just kind of like, well, okay. But, you know, it's the same thing with this. Like, listening to it is like, all right, I get it. But like, reading about it is kind of interesting and thought provoking. It almost scratches the itch better than the album.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I mean, it's got a, you know, a whiff of that whole, you know, process music kind of, you know, thing to it, which, again, like we always talk about, like pendulum music or something. Like, if you just heard that and you had no idea what was going on, it would be stupid. You have to know about it for it to be cool. Like, what's cool about it is knowing what's happening, you know? And I think that that is what's here, you know, the process, even though it's, you know, maybe slightly different, it's more of the playback than the process, is like essential to it.
Yeah, I know. But like, the problem is that, and maybe, you know, I'm just weird, but it's like knowing about pendulum music, which for people who don't know is like basically a microphone swinging over an amp, or a series of microphones swinging over amps and like creating like sort of random feedback patterns. Like, once I know about it, then listening to it is kind of cool.
No, exactly.
But this one, listening to it is not really that cool.
No, and again, I think it's the execution, you know? Like, pendulum music, I think, is executed very well. And when you know the idea, it is pretty neat. And it sounds neat. But this here, it's like the idea is really cool, I think. It's just not done, you know, to perfection.
Yeah. Now here's another question. Isn't it strange that we've kind of decided that Guestcom as a whole is a lot more conservative than Autechre, but then this one is like truly out there? I think we were joking last time about like, you know, how could the side project be any crazier than Autechre, because Autechre is already so crazy, and this one kind of does it. But I mean, does that change the way you think about the aims of the Guestcom project at all? The fact that we've got a lot of sort of like conservative sort of genre exercises and intentional limitations and stuff like that, and then all of a sudden like this really out there thing? Or is the whole mini disc thing itself sort of a limitation?
I think the whole mini disc thing is sort of a limitation again. You know, I was sort of thinking of it like NTS is sort of a limitation in itself, you know, with being split into these four, you know, 2-hour radio broadcasts. But
yeah,
you know, I think it's just done better and even maybe a less like conservative idea to make, you know, an 8-hour thing than what we get here. It's, you know, it's certainly like an out there idea. But the sounds themselves are not like that crazy. I mean, they're crazy in the sense that it's like non-musical a lot of times, but it's not like nothing on, you know, we've talked about it tons of time on this podcast. Like one of the reasons we love Autechre is like you hear sounds that you've never heard before, you know, that you've never even imagined.
Right.
I feel like here, okay, yeah, I heard some noise blasts. I've heard that before. You know, I've been to a noise show or two in my day. Yeah. You know, like I didn't really hear anything. I was like, what the heck was that? You know, everything was just like, okay, yeah, that was like a little beat for a minute, or you know, some digital artifacting or whatever. Like I nothing like blew me away in sound design.
I know. I kind of landed there too, because like at first I was thinking like it's so weird that this is like so out there, but it is actually kind of conservative, because it's like electroacoustic music is old as fuck, you know? Like
it's not like literally from like the 40s, right?
It's like not it's not a new thing. So it's like them doing kind of pure like electroacoustic, and then sort of pure like sort of this sort of digital processing and kind of stuff. Like all that stuff is pretty old school and seems like pretty limited on purpose. So it is kind of consistent with, I think, what we've felt like the Guestcom idea is. And I just feel like that's so different from Autechre, who I just don't think they set out with any kind of plan at all. Like, it's not like, you know, people think of like Confield, for example, as like the generative kind of album, you know, the generative software kind of album. And there's a lot of that on there, but I don't think they ever sat down and said, let's make that kind of album. I think it was just like the stuff they happened to be exploring with and working with. And a bunch of it is not, you know, generative. So it's like, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's no Autechre album that is like a really, you know, you mentioned NTS is kind of like the format is sort of a limitation, but sound-wise, I don't think they ever do that. But Guestcom, they seem to do that every time.
Yeah, completely agree. You know, like definitely like things like Confield, you know, like they sort of like develop this identity. But I think that's natural, you know, when you're working through a record, especially like experimental, you know, kind of music, to come to like something and then take the pieces that you've made that are all sort of similar and fit and sequence well and make a good album. You know, you're going to kind of have a theme for a record. Here, it's like the theme comes first, you know, it's the theme, like they, this feels like they were like, hey, you hear about these mini discs that are coming out? You know, you can shuffle. Like, let's make a shuffle record. And then they did it. You know, it's not like they came up with these 44 things of noise. And then, and I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but, and then we're like, oh, yo, we could shuffle these around. You know what I mean? It feels like pretty much every Guestcom release, it's been like, you know, let's do, you know, Detroit House. Let's do, you know, this.
Concept
let's do,
first.
Yeah, concept first. Then execution, whereas Autechre always sort of feels like execution and then a concept arises from that.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, do you have any temptation? Because I don't really know Russell Haswell's music that well, but I looked him up on Rate Your Music and he has like, you know, 50 albums and he's a noise artist. And I am very familiar with that kind of style. You know what I mean? Like the noise artist who just released something like every couple of weeks. This kind of sounds like what I would guess based on that Rate Your Music page, Russell Haswell might sound like. Do you wonder at all, like if he's maybe steering this ship?
I mean, you know, I'm tempted to say yes, because again, I basically did the exact same thing as you. I didn't know him, but I went to his page, saw he was a 50 album kind of guy and thought, okay, okay, I need to know here. And so, it's tempting to say that like, he's sort of steering the ship here, but you know, maybe too, you know, Sean and Rob wanted to play in that kind of world, you know, because they're decidedly, you know, not a release an album every kind of week, you know, sort of artist.
Yeah. Well, I kind of just want to put all of our listener correspondents out there at once and see what you think. We heard from listener Tyler, who writes, this album is hard to sit through. I consider myself a fan of avant-garde and ambient, but this goes nowhere. There's nothing tangible to latch onto and no development throughout. By the time you hit the 50th track, it all becomes a bit exhausting. The concept is a neat one, but it could have been done more effectively in 20 to 30 minutes, not a full hour. One of the best parts about AE is their talent for sequencing, and that art is intentionally lost here. Listener Cameron felt the same way, writing, many minidisc sounded like an interesting idea on paper, but when I finally got the digital files and loaded them into a randomized playlist, I was completely underwhelmed. The tracks are either far too long or far too short for a concept like a randomized musical Ouroboros to actually work. For one, too many tracks feature a substantial amount of silence at the start or end, making everything sound like isolated little blips and not a selection of pieces intended to flow together in any interesting way. And for another, few of the tracks in isolation stand out on their own. They just kind of sound like bland samples. Listener Jeff said he can't listen to minidiscs for more than a few minutes. And listener Tom said, interesting idea. Unfortunately, they forgot to write any actual music. Oops, rendering it borderline unlistenable. On the other hand, listener Ella said it's at least interesting, by far the most experimental of Guestcom releases. I can't say I'll be listening again for a while, but it was good and enjoyable. And listener Mitchell wrote, minidisc, for what it is, works as an electroacoustic piece by destroying and recreating sounds into something curatorial and physical. Definitely a Guestcom highlight and the closest AE has done to a straight noise album. So what do you think about some of these criticisms and defenses?
I think I agree with the general consensus that seems to be throughout these emails that, you know, sort of an interesting idea, not really one you want to listen to. Like Tyler, I really feel him. You know, it is hard to kind of sit through. It really doesn't go anywhere. I felt the same way. Like almost every time I listened to it, and honestly, I didn't listen, that many times because you right. sort of get the point. But every time I did it, I was like, oh, it's got to almost be over now, right? And then I would check, and then it not only is it disheartening to see that you're like halfway, but halfway is like you have 44 more, tracks in your playlist to go through. And it just always did seem like, And I really think he's right. If this had been 20, 30 minutes, it still wouldn't be like something I listened to all the time or anything, but I think it would have been like better executed and, more of an enjoyable like exercise to go through. Cameron basically has said what we've been saying this whole time, better idea on paper, just the silence kind of ruined, the execution's just not there. I think I pretty much agree with the general consensus here.
Yeah. I had kind of an interesting experience where I don't think I ever made it all the way through this in one sitting, but I would put it on like on shuffle and I would feel like this is kind of neat, I would enjoy myself for the first few minutes. And, we mentioned some of these like slightly more substantial sort of electroacoustic tracks. Like, there's some tracks that are like 3-4 minutes even. Mm. And it can be kind of interesting when it works out, where you get one of those every once in a while and things kind of settle and you like this chaotic mess and then it kind of settles again. But yeah, I mean, I think it was Tyler who said, by the 50th track, I felt like by the 20th track, I was completely fucking over it. However, if it was only 20 to 30 minutes long, like the shuffling wouldn't be as fun. Like every time I sat down and hit shuffle, I had fun for a few minutes. So I started to think, well, maybe you're just not ever supposed to listen to the whole thing, but just hit shuffle and listen for a little while every once in a while, because there are more surprises when it's this long. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, I get you. Because if it was only 20 tracks, your odds would be much higher that you'd start with the same kind of ones. I get that. Maybe the idea is a 20, 30 minute record, but to load all the, samples or whatever you want to call them, you have to, the technology wasn't really there, in 98 or whatever, to do that. So yeah, I get that. Cause you're right. Yeah. I mean, especially the first time or two, cause I think like you, this was the first Guestcom release I had ever heard. And I listened to it for the first time, handful of years ago. And I remember kind of having that same feeling like, oh, this is a neat idea, and then it's just like, it wears out its welcome quickly. And I had that same, the first time I listened to it, over these past 2 weeks, I put it on, I was like, oh man, this is like better than I remember. And it's pretty fun and avant-garde and, everything. And then it's just like wears you down after, such a long amount of time. So, maybe that is the thing. Yeah. Maybe you should only listen until you're done listening for that time.
Now, what do you think about what listener Tom said? They forgot to write any actual music. Do you think this could have been better, like with more music, you know, maybe not, maybe it could still like have tons of, you know, just noise and sound and stuff, but like if there was a little bit more musicality to it.
I don't know. I mean, that's really not my biggest, peeve with this record, is like the lack of musicality. I mean, I think he's just trying to be funny too, but like, it's more of, if the execution worked better, you know, like if these, like, if there was like, you know, I don't know, maybe some like drone tracks that bled together and, you know, could be in different pieces and make the, you know, like that, like if you created some musicality, like in that sense, like basically hiding the seams that are very visible here, I think it would work better. So in one sense, like it does need musicality, more musicality, but I think in a different way than what the listener was saying.
Yeah, well, I want to ask if there is anything that you do like about Minidisc here, but first let me read this from listener Tyler, who actually managed to find some track highlights. He writes, the Fully sequence is really eerie and engrossing. It reminds me a lot of C. Feel's C.H. Vox, an album that has creeped me out many times. Shoegazer is intriguing, evocative, and a bit dramatic. Listening makes me feel like I'm watching a movie or playing a video game and watching an ominous scene. Perhaps a corporate board is about to make an evil decision, a politician is about to declare war, a doctor is about to perform an unethical experiment, or watching a factory assemble some kind of super weapon. In any case, the feeling is cinematic and tense. Yo DMX Crew is wobbly and a little bit melodic. It has a bit of that LSEC NTS structure of slowly being swallowed by a blown out bass sound until the original melody, the organ, is nearly imperceptible. So what do you think of that? And do you have any personal highlights?
You know, those bigger tracks that sort of our music like obviously stand out. It's basically the ones that Tyler said. Like Shoegazer was the one that like was most noticeable to me, I think. I can't say though that I like really love anything here, you know, like I can't pick a track that I wish was on another record or, you know, outside of this, you know, idea too much. So I agree with Tyler's assessment of those couple tracks, but personally, you know, I could pick a highlight, but I don't really. It's a highlight of a low light. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, I kind of agree that the Fully sort of sequence is like kind of neat. Maybe like my favorite of the electroacoustic kind of pieces. Like again, very dreamy the way it's handled. Gotta shout out Yo DMX Crew, which is actually like kind of cool. It's sort of like a Fully, what is it, it's like almost 3 minute track, and it is just kind of like this very lo-fi, like totally blown out ambient piece. Like it sounds like Saw 2 run through like heavy distortion pedal or something, just like really satisfying bass bombs to it. But yeah, I mean, other than that one, I think, which like kind of sticks out, nothing really really sticks out. So lastly, we talked about this all the way back in our LP5 episode, but listener Darren wrote in to say, I agree with you about Autechre playing with formats on LP5. It definitely feels at home on CD, as the sound of the album is so clinical, laser-focused, and crystalline, so it just suits a digital medium. They also released the mini-disc album as guest comp that same year, which was another obvious play on format, that time taking advantage of the mini-disc's shuffle feature. So they came out pretty close together. Do you see Minidisc as illuminating in regard to Autechre's headspace at this time? Is it ultimately kind of an essential chapter in the Autechre story?
I don't know if it's an essential chapter. I think it's maybe a good like little side story kind of thing. But it is sort of illuminating in regards to that headspace. I mean, I know we just said that it always feels like with Autechre the concept, you know, comes second, where in guest comms kind of the other way around. So I don't know if LP5 was like intentionally, you know, like meant to sound good on CD, or if it was just like that was the era of the time, you know. But I think they definitely do play with format, and I think they basically have their whole career, you know, like the way the some of the records are split up into like, you know, smaller EPs like XI and stuff, you know, I think that's a hallmark of Autechre. So it is, I don't know if it's an essential chapter because the mini disc is sort of a failed format in the musical world. Funny enough, I was talking to someone at work today about mini discs, completely unrelated to this, but but you know, so it's a side story in the sense of like the mini disc is a side story to musical format history, along with the 8-track and all that, you know, kind of stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I think it is kind of interesting because I always think of LP5, and I know Sickly Sweet gives some hints and stuff, but I always think of LP5 as a sort of watershed moment when Autechre goes digital. And it's kind of like as momentous as, you know, Dylan going electric or something like that, because they were kind of late, I think, going digital. Like, everybody had switched over, and they were kind of resisting getting even, like, dirtier and grittier with the chiastic slide and stuff like that. But they kind of make the jump, and they make, like, a spectacular jump. Like, nobody jumped farther into digital than them. And I always kind of liked how I feel like LP5 really is. You know, it's supposed to look like a CD. It calls attention to itself as a CD. And it's just, like, really embracing the format, which is something, as you mentioned, they do a lot. So Minidisc feels like, yeah, something, I mean, really related, kind of illuminating, I think, in the way that, like, Autechre does think about medium. But they're just usually, like, a little bit more elegant about their explorations of format than just, like, this. And that might be a product of, like, the Minidisc is not a very, you know, fruitful kind of format, as you were saying. Like, there's just not much to say about it other than it can shuffle, and so they made a thing that can shuffle.
I think that's right on the nose.
Now, also, isn't it kind of strange, just like a side question, how Minidisc, like, stands out as Gescom's, I think, most widely known release, even though it kind of sucks a little bit? Like, it feels like it gives people the wrong idea about what Gescom really is, you know what I mean?
We've already mentioned it, but it's the first one we both heard. I mean, it even kind of stopped you from going on until this podcast. You know, I think Pitchfork covered it or something one time, and that's how I heard of it. Maybe they reviewed one of the reissues or somewhere. I saw it when it got reissued one time, and I literally didn't know that Autechre had, like, a side project, and, you know, that's where I learned. And, you know, so I listened to it, and then it was really disappointing. I took a while to, like, get any other Gescom thing. Basically, one time I decided to, like, find all the Autechre, like, stuff I had never heard, you know, like, some of the EPs and stuff. And then, like, in that process, I grabbed all the Gescom stuff. But it was definitely, like, last on my list, and basically because of Minidisc.
Yeah, it's just interesting because it's, like, it's a chicken or the egg situation, but it feels like this record kind of, like, it, like, speaks to what people imagine Gescom must be, you know, because they know how crazy and experimental Autechre is, and they just imagine, well, the side project must be nuts. And that's, like, completely wrong, I think. But this one, and even it's even wrong about this one, as we discussed earlier, but it just sort of, like, reinforces this weird stereotype that, you know, I think keeps people like us from even getting into Gescom, and it's, like, sort of a shame. But any other closing thoughts on Minidisc? Are you glad it exists, or is it just sort of, like, irredeemable in a way?
I think it's a cool idea. It's not, like, hurting anything by existing. Yeah. I wish it was executed a little better, but I don't hate it. If it was an Autechre record, I would hate it, I think. It would be a blight, but it's a side project, you know, whatever. It's a cool, like, little playground.
Yeah, I think I agree. All right, we ready to move on then?
Yeah. ISSSA was released by Scam Records on April 14th, 2003. That's just 1 week after Autechre's Draft 730, and the similarities between the two have led many to see them as companion pieces. In fact, AE apparently performed parts of ISSSA at Coachella in 1999, though there's also a popular theory that it could be a Sean solo project. No one can seem to find the original interview, but Sean reportedly said that he did one Gescom release alone, then nodded when asked if it was this one. However, when asked if SA stands for Sean Alone in the 2013 Ask Autechre Anything, Sean replied, "Do people actually think it means that? Ooh." Unlike most other Guestcom releases, ISSA was released on vinyl and CD simultaneously. Both come with a cool double-sided art insert by Michael England, but the CD also includes a 15-minute bonus track titled Mega Mix, which was originally broadcast on BBC Radio 1's One World show as part of a profile on Scam Records.
And I'll just add that in regard to reception, ISSA didn't receive much press at all and is kind of in the middle of the pack on Rate Your Music. It's got 133 ratings, which is high for Guestcom, but it's currently sitting at a just okay 3.37 average. So this one should be a lot easier to talk about, and I want to start with the presentation. Several listeners wrote in to praise the look of ISSA, like listener Eric, who said this has the best art of any Guestcom release. I love that cover so much, and the insert features some very cool steampunk brass instrument designs. And listener Jordan, who said it was the first Guestcom release he ever checked out, quote, because the cover art looks like a normal album compared to the others. You said you didn't think much of the Guestcom cover arts, but this one stands out. It's a great image of the Guestcom logo and very creative. So what do you think of the visual aesthetic here? Does it feel like we're in major artistic statement territory again?
A little bit, yeah. I mean, like we said with some of those other Guestcom, and even a lot of the ones we talk about today, even Minidisc, you know, the original art, they're just sort of like look like nothing, you know, like just. I think maybe it's a callback to, you know, like old 12-inch singles, you know, that were just the white jacket kind of thing. But this one here, you know, it not only does it have an actual cover, you know, it's got inserts and artwork and stuff. It may be because it was also released on CD at the same time. And I think, you know, the white thing just doesn't play as well there. But yeah, it definitely feels like more of a statement. In fact, like, I think that's one of the reasons why it's basically the second highest, amount of ratings here, since it's one on Spotify and looks like an actual record, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think it looks like kind of beautiful. Like, I just like love it. It looks like Da Vinci sketches, but like of weird alien technology or something. Really arresting, really cool. And then like that, you know, the disc itself, you know, I'm looking at the vinyl art, but the CD is also cool. It just has like a cool play on the kind of logo on both sides, and then that insert is like, you know, almost the executions in a weird way of the like Da Vinci designs that you see on the cover. They look like real metal objects, and they kind of do look like strange brass instruments, like the strangest you could ever imagine. But I don't know, it just like, yeah, it really like grabs me and did get me super excited to check this out, because I think, you know, there's really just the other one is Sounds of Machines Our Parents Used, which has like a really nice look and aesthetic and kind of presents itself as something to take seriously. And it's just like the story of Guestcom is like stuff that, you know, there's either disappointments here and there, or you really weren't expecting like how good this was going to be, you know, because it just doesn't look like they thought about it at all. But this one like really, really delivers on that front. So how would you describe the overall sound here? And let's just stick with the original four tracks for now.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the most Autechre sort of sounding release. Like this, this one sounds like a Autechre side project kind of thing. You know, it's got like a similar feel to their records. You know, it's got glitchy little sections, cut up things, kind of playing with tempos and times, and like the first track, like things sort of like feel like they're sometimes going in and out from each other and all, which just feels like a real, you know, sort of Autechre thing. That's why, like, I can almost believe the Sean. I mean, it is so like such a BS, like, oh, he said it in this interview, but no one could fight it. You know, I mean, it's got this sort of apocryphal feel to it, but you know, I can almost believe it.
Yeah, it really does sound like very Autechre-y to me. It's got like a very, and it sounds like Autechre of sort of the early 2000s specifically. You know, I don't want to be lazy and just say it kind of sounds like Draft, but it kind of does in the sense that it's like, it's got like a very organic feel to it. Like, you know, you sort of mentioned like things sort of like shifting in and out of time with each other, and just like lots of oozing kind of feelings. There's stuff like, I kept writing down the word wandering to describe different sounds, because there will be like this kind of tangled mess of percussion or something, and then like leads that just sound like they are barely part of the track, like they're just sort of oozing in the crevices of the track. Also, like, lots of percussion, you know, that's kind of what I always think of, like, Confield as being the, you know, sort of, again, like, not totally accurate, but like the sort of generative album. And Draft was like, let's do that again, but like focus way more on percussion. And neither of us like love Draft because I don't think it really nails it, but the tracks that do nail it, like the first track, like Xylon Room, I feel like is so cool. Like, so, and it's just almost like so exciting to hear, you know, not exactly, we'll talk about it more, but like more or less an entire record or an entire release kind of focusing on that, like Xylon Room style tangled web of percussion with like wandering, oozing kind of plucky sounds all over it. Just like sort of like organic shifting around, you know what I mean?
I completely agree too. You know, it is sort of nice, like this feels almost like a either an EP from that time period or even you know, maybe like some outtakes or demos or something. Kind of, you know, it's got a bit of that feel to it, because you're right, it does like kind of feel like Xylon Room, which I felt the same way. Like, you know, Draft's not my favorite Ottecker album, but there are like cool ideas in it. And I feel like here in the shorter time span, just the four, you know, original tracks or whatever, it almost like it's a small amount of time to be in that world, and kind of like it works kind of nicely.
Yeah. I mean, so we talked last time about listener Tom's complaints that most guest com tracks aren't quote unquote songs. They're just cool beats and chill grooves that don't really develop. Do you feel like that's true of the track constructions here?
No, I think these ones are a lot more developed. Like the first track, the title track, like, has there ever been a longer fade out in the world, you know? But it's not like a lazy sort of fade out. Like, I think the track like really kind of switches to a whole different sort of thing a good portion through, and then, you know, leads from this like really massive fade out, so much so that like if you don't have it really loud, you'll end up just standing there for like a good 30 seconds and what feels like silence. But I think then that sort of like so quiet, you know, basically silence leads like so perfectly into the second track, like when Tangle like finally starts up, I think it's like such a good transition, which I think that's something like all these guest com releases so far like never really, like none of them really feel like albums, and you know, like sequencing never seems like a huge deal or anything. Like it just sort of always feels like some tracks that are you know, fit the same sort of idea or whatever, but it sort of didn't matter if this one was first or this one was second, you know what I mean? Whereas like here I think like the whole record sort of like flows well and is sequenced it much more thoughtfully than any other guest com.
Yeah, I agree. And I mean, I agree about the tracks as well, that I think like they, like everything about this record is like very strange, like in such a delightful way to me. So like, you know, like the way that like the title track, just there is like a very strange, like kind of atonal like use of melody going on. I can imagine somebody like accusing some of these tracks of like having no melody, but they have a ton of melody. It's just like very discordant and strange. And like the title track has like these strange, like kind of haunting accordion type sounds. And then these kind of like that weird plucky thing over the top. And like these strange, like, you know, those tones that end up kind of taking over the whole track, as you mentioned, kind of like erupt into these like strange chimes, which also somehow sound like out of key with the rest of the track, and just makes like this really dense web of tone. I feel the same way about like Tangle 3, which has like some really fascinating like atonal shimmering highs like running over the whole thing. And so there's that, there's like this sort of strange like unexpected twists in just the sound palette, but also, as you mentioned, like strange twists in the track construction. Like the most notable example is the title track, as you said, that just sort of like shifts into this strange, like, you know, tone piece, like tone poem thing at the end or something. For such a long fade out. I mean, like TR2A, I think, like makes kind of a strange switch where it's like, I don't know, just like more and more like lo-fi, more and more bad, like strange chopping and like huge washes and drill. I just feel like everything shifts, but you start to get into like this whole sequencing of the record itself. And I wanted to ask you about that, but I wanted to read something listener Cameron wrote, who said, ISSSA just passes along for me. It's relatively interesting, but nothing particularly noteworthy. Not that it's bad, just that it hasn't been curated and is more just a collection of ideas. So sounds like you kind of disagree with that, but it's like I found myself wondering, like, the title track is such a strange opening track because of that huge fade out. And I do agree that, like, the kind of crazy, like, banging on a trash can feel of Tangle 3, the way it starts, is, like, kind of a fun surprise. But I almost started to wonder, like, do they not want this to flow? Because why else do you start with, like, a 3-minute fade out on track one?
Yeah, I mean, that is strange. And it's Tangle Ill, not 3, it just looks like.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. God. I only know that because someone in the comments pointed it out on Rate Your Music.
Unbelievable. But, I'm shook.
Yeah. But I get that. But I don't know. I think that fade out, I mean, it's a strange move for an opening track.
Yeah.
I completely agree. But, I mean, we're in Autechre world here. And so strange moves are the norm, you know, kind of thing. I think it just goes so well into Tangle that it really works in it, and it makes it worthwhile. I mean, I really think that that's like one of my favorite like parts of the record is that fade out into Tangle. I just think it's so cool. I mean, maybe I'm just getting like sort of hung up on what was maybe an accident or, you know, not really thought through, but I don't know. I think it works really well. I guess the other two tracks, you know, the B side of the record, you know, nothing really amazing to say about the sequencing there or anything, but you know, nothing to bad to say about it either.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like Slow Acid has to come last. Like, it's just such
a
cool,
it is a good closer.
It's like it kind of nails it because it keeps like this kind of steady like beat with like this heavy kick and this really light snare kind of all the way through, and it's like all the texture and stuff we'll talk about more, I'm sure, that's like kind of the dazzling part of the track. But it's like, it's kind of different from the other tracks in that it's just such a like steady, easy to follow sort of beat, whereas everything else has been just like this tangled mess. But yeah, I kind of agree. I mean, I sort of mentioned like how within each track, there's so many like unexpected, strange turns and choices. Mm-hmm. And then from track to track, there are really unexpected, strange choices. And I feel like that's sequencing. Like that's what they were going for, is the feeling I get. Not that these are just four random tracks thrown together in whatever order. It's that, like, it's actually supposed to, like, you know, flip you on your head, like, every track.
Yeah, I completely agree.
Well, before I ask you what your favorite tracks are, let me quiz you on Rate Your Music's track ratings. And let me just, as a disclaimer, note that there are not, like, a ton of track ratings. So these might not be, like, super reflective of anything at all. But there are two that are higher than the rest. What do you think they are?
I think maybe Slow Acid and the title track.
So surprisingly, it is the title track and Tangle Ill. Not Slow Acid, which is basically the rest of them are kind of all tied together as in sort of a slightly lower area, which is really surprising. And again, just makes me sort of question like how accurate these track ratings are, because as we'll see, there are lots of praise heaped on Slow Acid. But what are your standout tracks here?
I think for me, I mean, obviously, like I've already mentioned, the title track into Tangle is such a great little move. But I mean, Tangle just has like some of the coolest like drum sounds. Like they're so like kind of strange. You know, I think they're like recognizable as, you know, drum sounds, but they don't sound like any sort of like particular drum or, you know, drum machine or anything. You know, it's I think you said something about like, you know, trash can lid kind of thing. It has like a feel like that, and I think it's just really cool like sound design, which is something I think has been really lacking in Guestcom as a whole. You know, like Guestcom has felt like a lot of you know, kind of stock sounds and stuff, and you know, this one, I mean, like I said, this is the one that feels the most like an Autechre record, and I think it's you know, because of things like that, and Tangle is a Tangle Ill is a good representation of it here.
Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, I feel like there's such like, again, everything about this is surprising to me, and I feel like some of the sound design is like just stunning. Like, you know, you mentioned the sort of like trash can thing on Tangle Ill, but like by the end, it feels like the drums have gotten like sort of like crumpled and squished, like to where they start to sound like weird mouth sounds, like you know, and like, not to gross, sorry if I gross anybody out, but like by the end, the drums are in like 32 kbps. I swear to God, like they're just like destroyed. And there's just lots of stuff like that, like even more than on Draft, I feel like. Like I just found myself thinking like a lot of these tracks would be standouts if they were just on Draft. And I think it's because Draft had like kind of a consistent sound palette. And this one just takes a lot of risks, actually, like combining like really dirty, you know, lo-fi bit crush stuff like that you would kind of associate maybe with Chiastic Slide into this like hyper clean, like Tangle. You get what I mean? It just felt like very adventurous.
Yeah, I mean, this is the one, our biggest complaint of Guestcom has been that it's sort of too conservative. And this is the like one record that doesn't feel as conservative. I mean, even like we talked about, you know, Mini Disc is sort of this weird, you know, noise exploration thing, but it still is kind of conservative in that, you know, world. I feel like this is the one that feels like it's stretching out, especially in comparison, like you said, to Draft. You know, it's stretching its legs a little bit. It's kind of taking those sounds and doing something that Draft doesn't really do.
Yeah. Well, as I alluded to, there seemed to be a pretty clear consensus among our listeners, though it's really two tracks that everyone loves. Listener Tom called the title track an all-time Guestcom highlight, and listener Tyler wrote, the title track is incredible. At the beginning, I had one of those classic AE what the fuck moments, totally unsure where the unpredictable wandering melody was going and taken aback by the strangeness of the pieces in their assembly. The drums here sound very Aphex Twin-esque to me. The little pluck notes in the background sound silly and intentionally out of place. Seemingly out of nowhere, these organ chords rise up and begin to take over the whole track. Before long, they've become the focal point, and the track takes on a less robotic and more organic feel, evoking melancholy and vulnerability. Listener Eric said that the title track is really special. It's beautiful, but in a cool, detached way, and I enjoy the ultra-long fade-out on those lush chords, but he decided that Slow Acid is probably my favorite. It has such a perfect groove built around that endlessly morphing, sopping wet bass line. Listener AT also called Slow Acid probably my favorite Guestcom track ever, and listener Jeff wrote, the title track and Slow Acid are both essential listening. So, we talked about the title track, which I agree is like just a stunner, but we haven't talked much about Slow Acid. What do you think about that one?
I like Slow Acid a lot. You know, it really does that, like that morphing thing, like so well. It's really cool. You know, I mean, it's not my favorite here. I really like the play with percussion and stuff on the first side of the record. But I think it is the best on the B side, and it's definitely a highlight. It's definitely a Guestcom highlight for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think it's like amazing. Slow Acid. Can't get enough of it. It's crazy how it's got like this kind of like almost static shredded sound running through it. Like I mentioned how simple the beat is, but just this like, you know, shocking, you know, it almost sounds like exaggerated acid type sounds. And it's just so shredded. And then as it goes on, I loved whichever listener mentioned sopping wet chords. It gets like, it no longer sounds shredded. It now sounds like soaking wet, honestly, like in this weird, like imperceptible shift of a way. By the end, you know, it kind of like, it's kind of a, it feels just like highly compressed with like silence in between some of the like shredded sounds. And it starts to give me that like making me dizzy kind of like head fuck feeling. Like, I don't know how to explain it, but it's just like, it really is a trip to listen to the sheer sound of this thing. I also really love like some point, maybe like halfway through, there's kind of like these sick little bubbling sounds, like making this little like tip tap kind of a melody over the thing. At, like just these little bloops that are sincerely very groovy. Like I just, I don't know, I just am like in awe at this track.
Yeah, it's definitely great.
Well, is there anything you don't like here?
You know, I think, you know, of the original four tracks, I think they're all at least pretty good. TR2A is maybe the low light, but I don't think it's bad by any means. It's just, I think, the least good of these four.
Yeah, kind of like a skipping, stuttering record player kind of a vibe, like a Carl Stone kind of a feel. you know, I guess I should just read from our listeners. Listener Jeff said he doesn't care for TR2A, and listener Tyler sounds a little mixed when he writes, the percussion on TR2A also sounds like RDJ to me. This track is bizarre, it's hard to keep up with, and yet it's got a steady, predictable beat. The effects being applied throughout the track are crazy. It's definitely got some neat sound design, though. As does listener Eric, who writes, TR2A is perhaps a more traditional Guestcom track, a nice mangled hip-hop jam cycling through some interesting permutations. I should also mention that listener Mitchell said, TR2A sounds like another Lucy Conlide mix chopped up and regurgitated. I can't be the only one who hears it. So what do you think of that? And, you know, it sounds like you see this as the clear low light, huh?
I think it's the clear low light of the original four. What the listener said about it with Ottecker, Lucy being chopped up. I don't know if it's like necessarily like it chopped up, but it definitely is like, sounds like it's using some of the same sounds. Maybe they're chopped, maybe not. But I think my feeling of this track is pretty in line with Tyler. You know, it's cool. It's got cool parts of it. I'm not like overly in love with it or anything, but it's definitely cool. I agree. It does sound a little RDJ at times.
Yeah. I guess I should just mention that Conlide mix track, it comes from a 2001 Warp compilation called Routine. And yeah, I don't know for sure, but I just feel like it's sort of illustrative that this just sounds like some other track just kind of Carl Stoned up, like,
yeah,
just like sort of chopped and mixed up. And like, that's kind of what you're listening to. And so it's kind of like sort of a novelty aspect that I just don't think is as adventurous and interesting as all the other tracks around it. But, you know, it's not so long. It honestly, like, because it has that kind of destroyed hip hop feel, it almost makes me think of like a little preview of Untilted, you know, which has that kind of like old school.
I can see that, yeah.
Approach. That was just kind of what, like, maybe the one redeeming thing, but it's really not like horrible. Now, I think it's a good time to bring up Megamix, which is technically the lowest rated track on Rate Your Music at a 3.5. And listener Eric wrote in to say, like the track, but I don't know how well it fits with the rest of the EP as it's so much more harsh and repetitive. So what do you think about it?
I basically agree with that. You know, it's not really a bad track. It's pretty interesting. I think it would be cool on like a standalone 12 inch or something kind of thing, or a 10 inch maybe, sort of thing. But it really doesn't fit in here on this EP because it is like so much harsher and like repetitive. It's 14, almost 15 minutes long, whereas everything else is, you know, around 9-8 minutes here. And it doesn't change much. I feel like the best thing about most of the other songs on this record is like how much they shift and morph and twist and turn. And Megamix is like, I mean, it definitely like change, you know, there's some change happening, but it's much more of like a monotonous, like repetitive, you know, sort of harsh thing. It just doesn't fit here that well. I don't hate it on its own. It just isn't. I do hate it on this EP though.
Yeah, I feel like it's like sort of an interesting track. I mean, it just seems like, it seems like one idea in like slightly different permutations like throughout the thing. And that idea is basically sticking your head inside of an industrial printer. Like it's just very, it's like very short loops to the point where it just sounds like literally like machinery, like printing something or something. Very harsh, like very noisy. I do think that as it kind of like goes on, the sort of like relentless pummeling of the beat has like settled and slowed a little bit. Actually, one thing I do really like about it is like when a new sort of permutation of the beat arrives, it just kind of like arrives on top of the whole track and it's like not beat matched and it just sounds like a chaos for a second until the new thing takes over, you know? And
yeah.
It kind of like ends up settling a little bit. Like maybe the tempo is mostly the same, but it just feels like a little more chill and it gets a little hypnotic and interesting. I'm just of two minds because I feel like ISSSA, the original four tracks, it's like not even original because these are both releases at the same time, but it's like those main four tracks, they feel a little bit slight on their own. I mean, it's just like it's an EP, like for sure.
Yeah.
And I feel like this record kind of needs some juggernaut closer because it has to sort of like lift this thing, which again, we talked about the presentation, like how much this looks like a proper album, like a proper statement. I feel like it needs to be longer than those four tracks. And the only way to follow Slow Acid, which is just such an incredible closer, is to follow it with some like big thing. But because the sound palette is so harsh and abrasive here, it just doesn't fit. And like you said, because it's so repetitive, it doesn't fit. Like, I wish there was a track called Megamix that was exactly as long as this one and just sounded different.
Yeah, no, I understand what you mean, and I think I agree, because you're right. You know, if this is going to be sort of like a statement, like the artwork sort of suggests, and I mean, too, releasing it on a CD, you got the room to put some more stuff,
yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And especially, you know, this time people really, you know, sort of felt like they had to do that. But yeah, it just doesn't like go as well. I agree with you though. Like a big like monolithic closer would really, I think, like elevate this EP to, you know, a sort of mini LP like sort of status.
Yeah.
But it's just the execution again. You know, that sort of seems to be the problem with Guestcom is that everything always kind of falls a little short, and
yeah,
they get so close here, and then Megamix kind of, I think, is that misstep.
Yeah, I just like, I feel so torn because it's like, I think if you just got the main four tracks, it is great, but it really kind of hurts. Like, it dings it more that TR2A is not spectacular like the other three
yeah.
are, because it like makes up such a substantial part. I'm more forgiving of it when Megamix is here. Partly because Megamix also kind of sounds like TR2A. It just sounds like a blown out version of that kind of like record skipping sound. So it like kind of makes TR2A make a little bit more sense, even though the sound palette is not quite right. But then I kept thinking, like, I wish that the track was called Megamix, but it was just like ambient tones the way the ISSSA ends, because then that would tie like yeah. a nice bow on this whole thing. I don't know how to put it. I mean, it just seems like a crazy complaint, but I just feel like I wish that it ended with the same thing, but just sounded different.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I agree, you know, it does sort of like, it does sort of like make it easier to forgive TR2A, you know, it, with Megamix on there. But it's also like, do you want 15 minutes of the worst song of the four? You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like if yeah. it is like, if we're all agreeing that TR2A is the least good, then Megamix should not be 15 minutes in that
right.
world, you know?
Yeah. It's just like, it's just unfortunate, I think. But wrapping this one up, we had a bunch of listeners write in about the EP's relationship with Draft and Autechre in general. Listener Tyler wrote, Slow Acid sounds like Draft 730 outtake. In fact, I'm fairly sure that I can hear bits of the fast-paced beat of Reniform Pulse in the background of the latter half of this track. And listener AT wrote, it always sounded like the companion EP to Draft that Autechre never released. Very similar sound in a lot of ways. Slow Acid could have easily been on Draft. I'm a big fan of Draft, so needless to say, I'm a big fan of this release. Listener Quino, or Kino, possibly, similarly asks if we agree that the EP feels affiliated with Draft, but still, quote, bears its own unique technique that distinguishes it from the record. And listener Jeff claimed that ISSSA is one of a handful of quintessential Guestcom releases that he considers, quote, part of the AE discography. On the other hand, listener Cameron wrote, while I noticed some similarities in its sound to both Draft 730 and Untilted, it doesn't strike me as giving any additional context to Autechre's growth as artists. So where do you land on all this? First off, do you feel like ISSA complements Draft? Like, should they be considered companions?
I do feel like it sort of complements it. And really, that's one of the reasons I think I kind of believe the, you know, this is a Sean-only thing, is like maybe that's why it isn't the companion EP for you know, Draft, because Rob
yeah.
maybe didn't have a hand in it or something. I don't know, but it does feel like it complements it, you know. I think we both agreed that this is the most Autechre sounding, you know, Guestcom release. Does Draft doesn't have a companion EP. I can't remember all this stuff off the top of my head.
No.
And so yeah, I mean, so it does sort of feel like it's one of the only, if not the only, that doesn't have that. So it sort of feels like it's missing. And I think that this you know, fills that little bit of a hole there.
Yeah, I guess like Gantz Graph like kind of comes in between Confield and Draft, but it's not really affiliated with Draft. But yeah, it kind of does, like it feels like it could have used a companion in the way that a lot mm-hmm. of Autechre's records do. I mean, honestly, I'm tempted to say that I like ISS essay better than Draft. I kind of feel like it like nails the best parts of Draft, as we were kind of talking about earlier. And so it kind of, like, in a way it adds to Draft, like it literally complements it, but it also makes Draft feel more disappointing to me, because it's like, I wish I could cut the songs I don't care much for off Draft and just throw the songs that I love most from this in their place.
Yeah, I see that. You know, like if you switched them, the songs you don't like on Draft were this Guestcom EP. That would make more sense, I think. I agree. It does sort of like complement Draft in a negative way of making Draft feel a little more disappointing than I already thought it was.
Yeah. So any closing thoughts on ISS essay? I was going to ask you about the Sean Alone theory. You kind of brought it up, but like, there's no way to know, but I could totally imagine it. But anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, I feel like the only parts of me that, you know, believe that are reading those rumors. And then, like I said, like maybe that's why it's a Guestcom thing. Otherwise, who knows? You know, we can guess, but we won't know the answer. Otherwise, like, I think this is definitely, you know, this all, along with Key Now, are the two, you know, most essential Guestcom releases.
Yeah, I agree. I think I would add Sounds of Machines into there. And I think the first Guestcom EP is like really good, but it's not like super, super inventive or anything. But really those three, I think, are like, you know, going to stand out as the masterpieces of Guestcom. Even though ISSSA is imperfect, it is like the highs are so high and there are so many of them.
It's worth it.
It really it feels like one of those Guestcom releases you got to check out. But all right, let's move on to A1D1.
A1D1 was released by Scam as two super limited 12 inches, just 500 copies each, and a single CD on October 22nd, 2007. That's about 4 months before Choristus, but it sounds so dissimilar to Odd-Tekker's music from this period that many have questioned if Sean and Rob had much to do with it at all. Indeed, the record is mostly made up of chopped and twisted samples from classics like the 1978 disco track Space Dust by Galactic Force Band, the 1994 acid track Downfall by Armando, a 1993 ambient piece by David Byrne and Brian Eno called Come With Us, and a 1986 Chicago house track called No Way Back by Adonis. If you browse forum posts about this record, you'll get the sense that it's kind of hated by AE fans, but the 3.13 rating on Rate Your Music isn't too horrible as far as Guestcom releases go.
Yeah, so first off, what do you think about the cool but extremely minimal, even by Guestcom standards, presentation here? It's basically an untitled record, you know, and there aren't even track titles, but does it at least look like a serious statement? I just feel like this record looks so cool.
I do like the cover here, you know, it's just that Guestcom logo, which is a pretty neat logo, I think, you know, really just like super, super minimalist. As far as the like track titles and stuff, that's a little lazy, but as we get into it with the record, I think it sort of fits a little bit.
Yeah. I just feel like, I don't know. I just feel like I love the look of this record. It is like I said, like minimal, even by Guestcom standards, like there's just no information whatsoever. Like basically just Scam Records number there, and like the logo, different permutations of the logo on the different different parts of the CD. I don't know, I was kind of just feeling like I hadn't listened to this before, and I was just kind of feeling like, okay, we're in for another awesome one. But how would you describe the sound, and does it kind of live up to that presentation?
I think it lives up to that presentation of the this nameless kind of thing. It just, I'm trying to think of like a good way to describe it. I mean, what we've got here is just basically like sampled music for the most part, like, and it just sort of feels like, I'm trying to avoid saying the word boring, just like not too like inventive or anything. It's just like got a real sort of background blank feel to it, sort of almost like the cover, you know?
Yeah, I guess that's true. I mean, I just feel like the such stark minimalism and the lack of track titles and stuff just made me think like this was gonna be like, you know, just something kind of arresting, like, you know, something where they were like, the music is all that needs to say anything here, you know? And it's just kind of not the case, because it is like really just chopped up, like, you know, they're not really recognizable tracks to me because I don't know these tracks, but it's like you can tell that it is a chopped up like other mm-hmm. track. Lots of like kind of breakbeat type sounds. I don't know. I guess what's the weird thing that I'm, you know, just sort of avoiding getting into is just like the inclusion of just like straight acid, acid tracks, kind of like Detroit techno type tracks in what is otherwise like kind of a just chopped hip hop kind of a feel. I mean, I guess like that kind of breakbeat thing is a part of Detroit techno, but it's like stuff like A2 and D1 are just like pure acid grooves in a way. It just makes it hard to even like give this one singular sound, you know?
Yeah, I agree. You know, the sampling like kind of sticks out so much, but you're right. There is this like just standard techno fare tracks that like come up in there that really do make it seem kind of difficult to put together. But I guess if you looked at it as the original like record, you know, there's one of those on each of the discs, you know, like you've got A2 yeah. and then D1. So maybe that works a little better.
Yeah, I almost wonder if that would make it feel weirder, because it's like it just seems to like come out of nowhere. And you know, we talk about like sometimes Guestcom releases being like genre exercises, mm-hmm. and this feels like, you know, like a genre exercise, but not just one genre.
Yeah,
but at the same time, like maybe an era exercise, like kind of like just different permutations and aspects of that kind of Detroit techno scene, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's a good point. Maybe it's less of a genre exercise and more of a scene exercise.
Yeah, so, I mean, the other question I want to ask you is, like, we both kind of hated Guestcom EP 2. Does this feel like similar territory, or is it, like, a major step up from that?
It's kind of similar territory. It's maybe slightly better. You know, I don't think anything here is, like, offensively bad. It just, so much of it is just kind of pointless and boring. One of our listeners, you know, complained that like Guestcom sort of always feels like meandering and like it goes nowhere. And I think this whole release is kind of an example of that.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say that, I mean, to the first thing you mentioned, like, I think C2 is actively a terrible track. I'll just sort of spoil that now.
Yeah.
Like, just garbage. I mean, it's like this, it just sounds like circus music, like on fast forward, sort of. And then, like, right at the end, we then get that kind of familiar breakbeat chop going on that's more of a part of this record. But it's almost like they, like, I don't know, left their equipment on and like the cat messed with it and it was just running before they got in the room and then started recording the track, you know? So it's just like complete mess, like disaster. You know, I do think though that like there are a couple neat parts here. Like, I think A1 is kind of a cool track off the bat because it does have that kind of, you know, chopped, you know, standard chopped sound, cool breakbeat, but it's got this kind of nice, like, there's like a glimmering kind of hi-hat loop and some like use of reverse loops going on and just sort of like droning over the whole thing, and it just kind of gives it like this strange psychedelic feel as this kind of like, it's pure just like chop artifacts that are making the kick and stuff, and then it kind of shifts into like this slamming like pitched tone, and they almost go crazy with it, like just pitching it like as far and all over the place as they possibly can. It just feels kind of fun. I think it gets boring. Like, it goes on way too long, but it's like the kind of track where I'm like, oh, this is kind of interesting. And then like, oh, this is actually kind of really fun. I think B1 is also like a tremendous amount of fun because it's got this like chopped, like just a flurry of short, like sample clip kind of things. And yet this very dope, like slap bass kind of a sound running through it. It's just like, I don't know, it just keeps like the groove going while it's like Plunderphonics or like tape music, but with this like absolutely knocking groove. And sure, that's a genre exercise kind of a thing, but it's fun as hell.
I'll agree that B1 probably is my favorite track here, you know, but don't get, you know, don't get that conflated. You know, it's not the greatest track ever or anything. I'm gonna disagree with you though. I sort of hate that track. The those like the just sampled percussion is kind of, I don't know, boring. And then I really dislike the like back masking effect that you liked. I don't know. It just doesn't like play well. I don't know. The back masking like percussion thing to me is a little corny. And then that tone that comes in later, I have it written down here as circus synth, because it just sounded like circus music, which, you know, we get some more circus music on C2, which I do agree that is an awful, awful, awful track. but yeah, I don't really like A1 at all.
Yeah, I just felt like, you know, I put this on, I mentioned the presentation, just feeling like, okay, it's going to be like some cool, like minimalist thing. And then A1 starts and I'm like, oh, okay, it's just fun. We're having fun. And this is fun. And then it's like, I felt the same way about B1, but like in between those two is A2, which is just absolutely boring. I think just slamming acid kind of track with like this real squirmy kind of acidy synth lead and stuff. It's just like all very standard fare. You know, by the time we get to D1, it's like I'm bored again by like this very long track, the longest track here, which is just sort of like a, you know, bouncy bass line and like kind of chop vocal samples that are honestly annoying. You know, there is, I think, C1. I mean, I guess we're just stepping all over like our favorite and least favorite tracks here, which is fine. But like, you know, C1 is like full Carl Stone territory, like this idea like taken to its extreme. And it's got a kind of cool, like, you know, sweet pop hook that's been like scrambled, reassembled, like chopped and time stretched all over the place. But then it just gets a little bit like murkier and more chaotic in a way that like kind of loses the magic of those first moments. But it's like, I don't know, I just kind of felt like sometimes, okay, this is fun, like a fun, unpretentious kind of a thing, which I'm into sometimes, but then other times just like utterly bored, maybe even more than that. But I guess, you know, we stepped all over, but let me go ahead and quiz you again. Not many track ratings on Rate Your Music, but there is one that is quite a bit higher than any of the other tracks. What do you think it is?
Well, judging from you, it might be A1.
It is, actually is A1.
That surprises me.
7 ratings determined that. I should clarify. But those 7 people, they like A1. And then I'll just spoil it that C2 is like by far the lowest rated at a 2.4, but I think that wouldn't surprise anybody. Now, we didn't get much correspondence on this one, but I'll just note the listener Jeff said he doesn't care for it, while listener AT wrote, this one's just a lot of fun. Techno, acid, and hip-hop done in a slightly skewed way. Listener Tyler, on the other hand, went ahead and shared his live reactions. Some of his best notes include, was that an actual electric guitar in A1? Guestcom is all about genre dabbling. A1 makes me think this is supposed to be poking at prog rock, right? Just kidding. A2 is raw acid techno. Where are they going with this? It's becoming clear that I will not be able to predict any of the directions on this album. Oh, hello, C1. Is it Plunderphonics time? This track is kind of hilarious. They've really fucked up whatever sample this is way beyond recognition. I actually really like it, but it doesn't sound anything like Autechre to me. So C2, we've just gone full madness then. This release was all over the place. So, you know, where do you land? Maybe not the major artistic statement that we hope for, but if you think of it as some good fun, does it work at all for you?
I mean, there's some fun to be had here, you know. As much as I think A2 is like just kind of boring of a track, you know, it's fun. It's the kind of thing that, you know, if I heard it in a club or something, like I wouldn't complain. I do think C1 is probably maybe my favorite here, or B1, C1 are my favorites here. You know, C1, it's laid back. I like that sort of Carl Stone feel that they've got going on there. It just sort of, like everything on this record, doesn't ultimately go anywhere. And I think, like, it's just like, that's sort of how this whole thing is. It just teeters between being sort of mindless fun, unpretentious, like you said, and being just kind of downright boring.
Yeah, well, you know, just kind of wrapping up on this one, I want to ask you about AE's involvement or lack thereof. As you mentioned, a lot of people seem to think it doesn't sound like the work of Sean and Rob at all. But I thought it was interesting. A listener, Tyler, said, B1 reminds me of a little of Choristus, which I guess makes sense given the era, specifically BNC Castle. Do you hear any of that relationship? Because you know how, like, Choristus does have like a lot more of that play with like pure acid sound palette, you know what I mean? Or are you just tempted to say that this might not involve much Autechre?
You know, I'm tempted to say it doesn't involve Autechre much. But also, you know, the same thing, I think, like when we talked about Guestcom EP2, are we just thinking that because it sucks and we're like, well, Ottucker can't suck, you know? And so I don't know, you know, I feel like I want to say this one definitely doesn't sound like normal Ottucker much. I guess I can hear a little bit, you know, with B1 and Choristus, but, you know, I didn't come to that conclusion on my own you know, reading that email and stuff. So I'm tempted to say it, but I think it's just sort of like a, they can't suck sort of feeling, you know?
Yeah, I just feel like I can't even overread it and find anything that I see as Ottucker. Like, I get that idea that they were maybe, like, a little bit interested in acid at this time. We get some pure acid here and stuff, but, like, that's just a conceptual connection, and I just don't really hear it. And I feel like, obviously, they play with acid in, like, a thousand times more interesting way on Choristus than on here, if they are here. I just don't know, but it was like closing thoughts on A1D1. It's like, I was like really let down by this, despite having a little bit of fun, but I just like, it was kind of a drag when I knew I had to get around to listening to it again, you know?
Yeah, I always sort of had to like stop myself from just listening to ISSA and put this one on. It's a shame that this is one of like the few that is on Spotify too. You know, it's like one of the worst ones, and it's one of like four or five of their releases that are on there.
You know, I use Tidal, and it doesn't have anything but mini disc.
Oh, so really?
That's like, that's screwing some people over, like who are interested in checking out Discog and all they can listen to.
All four people who use Tidal.
Yeah.
I've got it here in front of me. The A1, D1, mini disc, ISSA, Keynel, Gescom EP, and then two splits are on Spotify.
Well, let me tell you, you'll want to hear Minidisc and Lossless.
Yeah, that's true. You do.
As it was intended to be heard.
Definitely.
All right, we're ready to move on to Skull Snap.
Yeah. The Skull Snap EP came out on August 22nd, 2011, after a 4-year silence from Gescom, and it remains the last proper Gescom release 10 years later. Exactly 10 years later, actually, since we're recording this August 23rd, 2021. Unlike the last few Gescom records, Skull Snap was pressed only on vinyl and has never been reissued. It also wasn't released by Scam, but by Scam's short-lived affiliate hip-hop imprint, also named Skull Snap, and that feels pretty appropriate for this EP, which has an old school graffiti aesthetic and a real 80s b-boy sound. Unfortunately, no one seems to notice this release, and those who have don't seem to like it very much. It's only got 43 ratings on Rate Your Music with an average of 2.89.
So this one has almost the strangest presentation of all of Gescom's releases, I think. It's the graffiti aesthetic they sometimes use, but a super traditional take on that. What do you make of the way this EP looks, its release on a hip-hop imprint, the kind of like non-AE-looking track titles, especially in 2011, and just the whole presentation here?
Yeah, the presentation of this one is strange. I mean, I don't know, maybe that is just, I'm not familiar with this label, so maybe just it's one of those labels where are all their, you know, vinyl record labels look similar. But yeah, the track titles, I mean, it's they're real words and you know, not just file names or whatever, and they really like don't seem like Ottucker was the one that picked them.
Yeah, they don't, but it also seems kind of like a concept first situation, doesn't it? Like it just you know, it's almost like they had the visual look of it before they even started making any music, you know, which kind of leads us into describing the sound. You mentioned the 80s b-boy thing in your intro, but what else would you say in describing the overall sound of this EP?
I'm just gonna come straight out and be negative here. This whole EP sounds like kind of royalty free music you'd use on like a YouTube video or something, or you know, bumper music for radio or theme songs for, you know, a TV show or something. Like it all just sort of feels like royalty free.
Yeah, I guess I can kind of agree with that. I mean, it's like it's all very, very funky, I think. Like it's kind of a you know, it's got kind of like a lo-fi, like kind of 80s hip hop sound, but it's like very intricate. Like it's like too intricate to like rap over or anything like that. It's not like the kind of, you know, just set and forget it kind of grooves that I associate with that sound. It's like really, you know, tracks like the first track, Seven Stone Triangle, it's like the strangest, like most intricate kind of like these emerging in these synth crescendos and like this kind of string blasts and stuff like that. Like it feels like triumphant entrance music to me. And it's just like such a strange, intricate kind of build up to like these big crescendos. Same thing with like, I don't know, like seventh ace, deuce, which is, the third track here. It has like a similar, it sounds like RZA or something. Like it sounds like a beat off Supreme Clientele or something because it is like this glorious kind of rocky soundtrack type music or something with like complete with like crowd noise and stuff. But it's just striking like how, funky. I mean, you can just hear that it's like sampling kind of funk and disco music and turning it into hip hop, but like some of the most intricate kind of hip hop beats I've ever heard.
I think it does always sort of feel like, I think you bringing up Supreme Clientele is like a good thing. Like it feels like it's missing something, you know, like Supreme Clientele needs Ghost on there, you know?
Yeah.
Here, it just, I don't know. There's nothing to like elevate these beats from just being like, you know, like on YouTube there's like the, you know, all these people with like RZA style beats, you know, that just random people rap over and stuff, you know, royalty free, beats. It sort of feels like that, like Seventh Ace Deuce is like RZA style beat, you know? I don't know. I really dislike this record.
I mean, I found myself sometimes thinking like, it's sort of interesting how grainy and lo-fi it is. And like several tracks use, like I mentioned, sort of the crowd noise and like the screaming and applauding on Seventh Ace Deuce. But like, you know, the first track, Seventh Stone Triangle, it uses like static and like that sort of vinyl scratchy sound, like as a genuine instrument. Like it's worked into the beat in a really interesting way. Could you at least credit it with that? Like it does kind of sound like stock music, but it has this like kind of strange, like lo-fi grain that I feel like it really leans into.
Okay, I'll give it to you. It's interesting, royalty-free music.
Well, does it sound like, you know, we've talked a lot of shit about, like, the Gescom EP2 and A1, D1. Does this feel like in the same ballpark, the same kind of record-chopping approach, or do you see it as, like, something totally different and sounds like maybe a big step down even from those?
It's definitely a step down, and yeah, I think it's kind of different. It doesn't... I don't know. It definitely feels like, you know, record chopping or something, but it just feels like, I don't know. I don't know any of the songs that it's actually, you know, sampling, but it just always feels like it's sampling things that were like meant to be sampled or something. Like, in that same way, I hate to keep making the same joke, but the same way, you know, if you're making that sort of, you know, YouTube beat, you can't sample Stevie Wonder because you'll get taken down. You know, it sort of feels like that kind of thing. Like it almost feels like, you know, like fake sampling, or, you know, like sampling something that is supposed to feel like, you know, 70s funk or something, but isn't like actually that, you know. I don't know. Yeah, there's just something like kind of artificial that about this like record, and even like sort of the look of it, you know, that label and stuff. I don't know, it just sort of like is pretending to be, you know, like the 80s or something, but it's not.
Yeah. I mean, so it might make sense to just sort of have the AE convo now. Does it sound more like Sean and Rob than A1D1 did? I thought it was interesting that listener AT compared Skull Snap to the more overtly hip hop tracks on XI, writing, "Another release that's a ton of fun. This is a weird one with a lo-fi bargain bin record hip hop aesthetic all the way through. The beat on Seven Stone Triangle sounds like a straightforward version of the beat on Cloudline on XI, at least to my ears. Seventh Ace Deuce has that same beat. These are all great, very strange tracks." That was our only Skull Snap email, by the way, except listener Jeff mentioned that he has, quote, mixed feelings about it. So do you hear Sean and Rob here at all? Is it even close to interesting enough?
I mean, I feel like I can feel Sean and Rob here more than like A1D1, even though I think this record's worse. Because, you know, they've done this B-boy thing in the past. You know, they always, even to this day, like mention it in interviews of like, you know, that they're B-boys at heart kind of thing. You know, Cavity Job and stuff like isn't a million miles away from stuff like this. So I feel like I can sort of, you know, like it wouldn't shock me more like I if I had to guess, like, you know, Robin Shot are only on one of these Skull Snap or A1D1, I would definitely pick Skull Snap. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I kind of agree, but I feel like this record, like, because I hear that XI comparison, and of course the timeline would sort of line up there, because there are some like real hip-hop inspired tracks, particularly toward the end of XI, that are just really cool grooves, and I think evoke the same era of music. But what I kind of decided is that I feel like Skull Snap is like literally imitating the same type of music that Sean and Rob are then like utterly reinventing on XI. And you know what I mean? It's like you can hear the similarity, but you're actually not hearing a similarity. You're just hearing Sean and Rob inspired by the kind of music that this is.
Yeah, I get that. I mean, and maybe that's like what this comes from, you know, maybe you got to play in that field before, you know, it's like Picasso said, you know, like you have to learn to paint before you can like learn to, you know, ruin painting and stuff, you know, it like maybe that's where this comes about, you know, if they for XI, you know, they have this idea of disintegrating this 80s, you know, sort of b-boy hip-hop kind of thing, maybe you gotta play around in it first before you take it apart.
Yeah, it could just be playing around with that. And I love sort of AT's comment about this, like leaning into this kind of lo-fi bargain bin record aesthetic. I mean, mm-hmm. You compared it to like you know, Free Beats or whatever, but like
it's the same sort of thing though. Like you can get away with that's kind of what I meant. Like when you use like these records that are from the thrift store that no one's ever heard of, you're not going to get in trouble for sampling it because no one's going to know. And that's sort of what I meant. I think the way they put it is better.
Yeah, I just feel like it like sounds and looks like the 80s version of what we have on YouTube today, which is like, I do think there were like lots of bargain bin kind of records that were just people made these kind of like chops of disco tracks. And like a lot of these tracks are like there, you can just hear like the sample so clearly, like they have not been like totally twisted or reinvented in any meaningful way. They've just been like turned into something a little bit more hip hop. And it feels like, again, we talked about concept first. I almost feel like that was the concept. And so maybe it's not like good enough to like say for sure that I think Sean and Rob are like a big presence here, but it just feels like consistent almost with Guestcom's like concept music kind of genre exercise thing. There aren't enough ratings, honestly, track ratings for me to quiz you on that. There's like one or two on some of the tracks here. So is there anything you do like, super don't like? I mean, I feel like we talked about Seventh Stone Triangle and Seventh Ace Deuce, but we haven't even mentioned any of the other tracks, you know?
I mean, there's nothing I love here. I'll definitely say that. I really don't like RZ Panic or whatever. My note here was why was this released? It just seems utterly pointless. As far as a highlight, you know, I mean, I guess maybe Seventh Stone, you know, Triangle, because it's the first one and I'm not sick of the record yet. I hate to be so overly negative here, but I mean, Seventh Ace Deuce is maybe the like literal highlight. I think it overstays its welcome a little bit. But it is like a listenable, you know, track. If I was making a YouTube video, I'd maybe, you know, stick it in there. How many times am I gonna say that this episode?
I feel like it's a good like RZA impression. Like it actually is like
exactly.
It's just an impression, but it's like a pretty good one, and I kind of dig it. I mean, I agree that the like RZ Owner Panics or whatever is like the worst song here. It's kind of just like a drum solo. It's like a loop of like you know, a wild drum fill, and there's like another like even more wild snare roll that's like hitting so hard, just like put right on top of it or something. You know, I'm kind of intrigued by the last track, which is like a minute and a half long like outro thing, V Take Fast Roll. It's a clear like funk kind of rhythm. Like you can hear the like wah wahs and you can hear the palm muted like little guitar plucks and stuff. But it's like whatever loop they're using, maybe accidentally or maybe it was intentional, has created like this total jumble of drum sounds that like honestly sounds very Autechre to me. Like I have a strong feeling it's an accident because it's just like a bad loop or something that made it sound like Autechre, but it genuinely kind of sounds like strange, like Autechre's drums sometimes do.
Yeah, yeah, I could see that. I mean, you know, you're maybe being a little kinder to it than I would, but yeah, I mean, there's some interesting ideas in that track, maybe.
Yeah, and then just to mention Cake Mike, which I also don't like that much. That's kind of like a weird pummeling mess of like a chopped up track. It honestly kind of sounds like if they made Megamix in 1988.
It just feels like it never actually begins. Like it just,
yeah,
it's always gearing up and then nothing happens. And then we're on to the next song. You know, it's just like, it just seems like such a scrap of an idea. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I guess you don't care much for the sequencing then. I feel like it's sort of interesting that it closes with something that feels like a real closing track and kind of opens on like a big, like straight up literal sounding entrance music. This seems like there was some attention to the flow, but doesn't impress you much.
No, I mean, you know, I think really the outro like seems like an outro, and I'll give it that the first track, you know, is a good introduction maybe, but you know, the ones in the middle there, you could just sort of shuffle them around. I don't think you're going to change too much. Yeah. Really though, honestly, I think only the last song like 100% needs to stay where it is. If that was in the middle or anything, I think it would make that track kind of suck. Where now it's kind of neat. It's one of the more neat things, you know, on this release.
All right. Well, any closing thoughts on this one? I literally wrote down in our doc, do you have any temptation to say it's underrated? But it sounds like the answer to that is unequivocally no.
Yeah, it's definitely unequivocally no. If anything, I'd say it's maybe a little overrated. it's a 289 on Rate Your Music. I lowered that a bit and gave it a 1.5 on my Rate Your Music profile.
Wow.
It's just, I don't like this at all. It's probably the least good Guestcom release that we've listened to. I really had to force myself to like re-listen to this one, you know, especially when like ISSA was pretty good, and then even A1D1 was you know, not the most interesting record, but at least listenable and stuff. I'd rather listen to mini disc than this one, to be perfectly honest.
Wow. It's just incredible like how overlooked this one is. I guess, you know, most people seem to feel the way you do, but it's just like they sought out to make a bargain bin record and they succeeded in making a bargain bin record.
Exactly.
Nobody knows it, but yeah.
Yeah. I was just going to say, if it wasn't for this podcast, I probably would listen to this one time and then never listen to it again.
Wowza. All right. Well, wrapping up here, this whole episode, I want to return to the question we kept asking about the first batch of Guestcom releases. Why does Guestcom exist? Like, what is the mission statement here? Last time we sort of settled on the idea that Guestcom in general is almost like a breezy genre exercise project, even though the self-imposed limitations sometimes result in really brilliant stuff. But did these releases make you rethink Guestcom and their objective at all?
No, not so much. I mean, it still sort of feels, you know, Skull Snap obviously has this like idea, you know, of this bargain bin record. A1D1, you know, has this sort of genre exercise. Even Mini Disc isn't necessarily like a genre exercise, but it's definitely like has this limitation of the format. You know, ISSA is the one that's a little different, and I think we agreed is the most Autechre, you know, feeling thing. Definitely like, and that's one of the reasons why. But I do feel like this Guestcom is the like project of placing limitations on their self when they're like a group that seems to work normally without limitations. You know, we've mentioned it so many times, but it's the opposite of what normal, you know, side projects are. You know, side projects are usually where an artist can like open up and, you know, they don't have to worry about record sales or anything. You know, it's just sort of like they're making stuff for themselves or stuff that's fun. And Guestcom just so much feels the opposite.
Yeah, I think, I feel like even more confident about saying that it's kind of like these strange little concept first things, and that sometimes results in like genuine brilliance. I do think like stuff like ISSSA is like a little bit more of like a possible solo project, possible like collection of things that didn't fit on Draft or something, and it's sort of unique in that way. But everything else, it has those limitations, and I feel like they're just having like some breezy fun with those limitations. Mm-hmm. Now, I also wanted to note that listener AT says that the latter period Guestcom releases are his favorites. But what about you? We split the discography sort of arbitrarily, and we do have two late 90s remix EPs to discuss next time on that bonus listener email episode. But do you feel like the stuff we discussed today is stronger than the stuff we discussed last time?
I don't know. It's sort of split, you know, like I don't know. I think maybe the first stuff was better. You know, Key Now is like decidedly great. I agree. Sounds of Machines, Our Parents Used, is like a really good record. I enjoy it. Here, I really only really like ISSA. You know, the rest, like A1D1 is tolerable. It's fine. You know, whatever. I, you know, Guestcom EP like one. Not groundbreaking or anything, but it's interesting and stuff. So I guess that would mean I prefer the earlier stuff, but it's not like a, you know, overwhelming decision.
See, I feel like the opposite. I feel like the first batch was like a million times better. In fact, this was like a little bit of a drag for me because I only liked ISSSA, and I liked that one a lot.
Yeah.
But everything else, like no matter how fun it was sometimes, like I could never hear it again, and I would be okay with that. You know, I could never hear Mini Disc again, and I'd be okay with that. It's like I'm keeping ISSSA, but I feel like I'm keeping most of the stuff we talked about last time, particularly Sound of Machines, Our Parents Use, and Key Now, and of course the Key Now remixes. But like the first Guestcom EP, I think I'll return to too. And it's just like this was kind of just like one great record. I mean, it honestly sort of feels like Guestcom was like, I don't know. I mean, ISSSA complicates this, but it feels like Guestcom was like this outlet for 90s Autechre, okay, who were like relentlessly pushing forward and wanted to do like kind of fun genre limitation stuff on the side with some buddies. And that like Guestcom honestly just sort of ended in 2003. Like, and they've released stuff since then, but I don't even hear much Sean and Rob and those other things. It just feels, and you know, they haven't released anything in 10 years, obviously, but I think Guestcom as a thing, like as an actual interesting project with a mission statement and stuff, like just died a long time ago.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. You know, it just, a lot of the stuff here, I mean, especially Skull Snap, I just question why it exists, you know? It just doesn't feel like necessary in any real way.
Yeah, well, we kind of, you know, I was going to ask you if you, again, to the question we asked last time, like, should Guestcom as a whole be considered an essential part of Autechre's discography? And feels like we kind of already settled that, which is like ISSSA kind of does, you know, shine some new light on Draft. But, you know, and Key Now is essential, as you kind of said. I like Sounds of Machines, sounds like maybe a little bit more than you, but it's like, other than that, it's just like, I think we're on the same page we were last time, which is like, go to this if you are that hardcore fan who wants more. I mean, here, Key Now, I think for sure, but other than that, right, it is the side project.
Yeah, it definitely, like, it's kind of sad, you know. One thing I was like looking forward to in doing all this Guestcom stuff is like all the Guestcom things I've really only listened to completely in passing, you know. I've never like really dug into any of them, so I was really hoping that, like, you know, I was gonna discover at least one or two things that were, you know, like seriously great. And I mean, I guess we did with Key Now and Parents Used and you know, ISSSA, but even then, it's like all of those have like their little inconsistencies or negatives. You know, I was just sort of hoping like to really get like a hidden gem, and for the most part, I feel like Guestcom is a bit of a letdown.
Wow. Yeah, I guess. Yeah. So closing thoughts on this chapter of the Guestcom journey. I mean, I feel like, I guess the whole Guestcom journey, I don't feel let down because I feel like I discovered a couple records that I love, and I do this all the time anyway. I listen to like bad records every fucking day just to find like one good thing. And I found like three, four like good things, like maybe two like great things even. So I'm satisfied with that perfectly. But yeah, it just feels like a side project.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair. I mean, because I do the same thing, but I just feel like, you know, it had this like glimmer of Ottekker, and it was like,
yeah,
I was gonna find 100 great things, or I was gonna find some, you know, some 5-star, you know, greatest things I've ever heard, and I don't think I really got any of that. Which, I mean, maybe that's too much to ask, but yeah, I don't know. Well, what do you think about Guestcom's last releases? We're going to cover the This and That EPs on next week's listener email episodes. Send us your thoughts on them or anything else, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. Next proper episode, a week after that, Ottekker's remixes. We want your opinions, hot takes, what we should cover, gonkcastpod@gmail.com. If you like the show, help us out. Subscribe, leave us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. Look us up YouTube. Stay connected to Twitter, Instagram. Those are @GonkCastPod, and we'll see you next time.
See ya.